Of course, with it being Wednesday, it is time for Green Side Up, and we do have one person in the studio. We have another one on the phone. We got a David Scrantz and a Wendy Powell. Ladies, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning.
Now, let's see. I am doing good. I forgot to turn your mic on to David. I had the wrong one on. I still had three on.
Oh.
But again, it's good to have you ladies in this morning. And we'll start with Wendy here in just a second. But before we do that, David, you do have a few programs coming up, correct?
Yes. I just wanted to mention a couple programs that Extension has coming up. I know Barbara and James were on last week, and Barbara talked about Dining with Diabetes. That course is coming up. And also the Pickle Party they are hosting is this coming Saturday, and then the Master Gardener program will also be offered online this fall, and they're accepting signups for that already. So if you would like information on any of those programs, you can contact any of the Extension offices. The number for the Independence office is 620-331-2690.
All right. So again, the Dining with Diabetes, the Pickle Party happening this Saturday. That will be at the Oswego Community Center, and that will be a lot of fun. And then, of course, she said like the Master Gardening, which will Gardener will be online this year. All right. Well, Wendy, we're going to go ahead and throw it to you and ask you just before we got on air, what are your subjects going to be today? And it's going to be stockpiling fescue.
Yes. Thank you, Kyle. So this is the time of year to be thinking about what you're going to be feeding your livestock this winter. So some of the options, there's so many different options, but something that some people might consider is stockpiling. And this is just the practice of fertilizing forage or having high quality forage grow through the early fall that will be grazed later. So it's essentially high-quality forage that's just going to stay in the pasture that the animals are going to harvest rather than it being put up for hay. Fescue is really well-adapted for stockpiling because it has that waxy layer on it that will protect it through longer, through the deeper into the winter, and it'll last longer with the cattle stepping on it, feed trucks driving on it to check animals. It'll last longer compared to the other forages like Bermuda or even your annuals that you might plant for winter grazing like brassicas, turnips, things like that. Fescue, you do have to start this process around about now. You still got a couple of weeks, but if you've got a pasture that you're considering putting into a stockpile, you're going to want to clip it if it's not been grazed down. So make for sure that all the leaf material and seed heads are out of the way for new leaf tissue to grow this fall. You want that growth to start about the middle of August, so right about now. And then all of that new leaf tissue will be higher in quality compared to the older stuff that was grown through the summer. You can put on some fertilizer for that. I can help you with some soil tests if anybody's interested in that. So this fescue that's going to be stockpiled is going to be 12 to 16% food protein generally, and it runs on the energy levels of 58 to 65%. So it's a really high-quality option for animals to graze that. You don't have to put up for hay. You just have to have it there in the pasture and have fencing for it. There's lots of other factors that go into this. I'm not sure how much time I have left, Kyle.
You have plenty of time, so there's no rush for sure.
Okay, good.
You have at least another 10 minutes, so there you go. That should give you plenty of time.
So tall fescue is really responsive to nitrogen fertilization. It's going to produce really good yields of high-quality stockpile, so you need to fertilize it with 40 to 60 pounds of nitrogen per acre when you're ready for your fall season to start growing. That fall season should start growing, like I said, right about now. Fescue produces 60 to 70% of its total production by July 1, so that's what we grazed last spring and early in the summer. But the remaining production is going to occur September through November. So we have a nice window here of some high-quality fescue to be grown. So depending on your location and your fall growing conditions, and here in Southeast Kansas, we start getting a little bit of cooler temperature towards the end of the month. And that fescue is really going to start taking off again. So that fescue can yield about 2,500 pounds dry matter per acre, which is quite a lot of hay. And again, I'll reiterate that this 40 to 65 of nitrogen does need to be applied and make for sure that your phosphorus and potassium levels are on target. You can stock a rate of about one cow per acre. And this stocking rate of one cow per acre should provide the average wintering dry cow about what you would compare to 70 to 90 days of hay. So a really good option for those that might have some pasture that was used earlier in the year, and they can plant this, or they can use this as stockpile fescue. Some other winter grazing options. I've been reading up on some turnips. Of course, there's always winter wheat that needs to be thinking about going into the ground now. You don't have to plow pastures in order to plant winter wheat for grazing. It can be no-till drilled in, and you can get some really good stands with that. The turnips are an interesting plant. Livestock, especially cattle, will eat on that. It takes them a little bit to become adjusted to eating the leaves of the turnip, but once they do realize the taste, they really go to town on it. It's a pretty good forage that's really high in protein and energy. So there's lots of options for early winter grazing that you don't have to start putting out hay, really extend that winter grazing season, allow that cow to get some exercise and not camp out at the hay rack, things like that. Because camping out at the hay rack, that can cause a whole bunch of different issues. Foot rot from the bacteria that is in that organic matter right there, as it kind of turns to sludge a little bit. So there's lots of good reasons to provide winter grazing on that.
All right. So again, that's a good way to start stockpiling fescue. So, Wendy, we appreciate that report for you, and we'll go over to David here, as we do still have about 8 minutes here or so. And I know, David, your main topic today is going to be about wildlife habitat, but. We were talking off air about one of the things you talked about, and it's going to be in your report. It's actually going to air today several times, but you talked about snakes, and and not wild about snakes. So just for maybe somebody has not heard that report yet this morning, which I've heard it, but maybe somebody hadn't heard about it. But I mean, what was the main thing you were talking about on snakes during that report? Because it's just, like I was telling you, I'm not wild of animals that have no arms or legs and just slithers along. It's just slightly creepy.
Yes, I'm not that wild about snakes either. They're definitely not my favorite animal, but they are an animal that's out there in the natural habitat.
And they're essential, really.
Yes, they are. And you will come across them from time to time. So in my report that will be airing later today, I talk about the different types of snakes and a little bit more specifically the ways that you can identify poisonous snakes from non-poisonous snakes, and some of the ways that you can try and identify them from a distance. Because of course, snakes are essential, but you do want to be aware of those poisonous snakes. And of course, definitely don't get close to them, respect them, give them their distance versus those
social distance them.
Yes, yes, definitely. Stay 6 feet away from them at least.
Maybe 20 feet.
Yeah.
Because they can move quick, man. Those things, they can, they look like they can't move fast, but all of a sudden they'll snap up and they're moving. So
yes, they can. And then versus those non-poisonous snakes that, of course, They may still bite if they feel threatened, but they're not harmful like the poisonous snakes. So just giving some people some ways to identify them, as during the summertime, snakes are out and about more, so you're more likely to see them this time of year. As it starts cooling off when we get into the fall, they'll start to just burrow in for the winter and stay warm. And then in the spring, when it starts to warm up again, you'll start noticing them out and about.
Yeah, that's why I've always said, I like winter a little bit better than summer because it's cooler. And two, less spiders, less snakes. That always makes me happy when I see less of those guys around. But your main topic today, though, is wildlife habitat.
Yeah, today I'll be talking about wildlife habitat and a little bit different take on wildlife habitat. I'll be talking a little bit more specifically on how you can manage your backyard, or if you have a few acres, you can manage those acres for wildlife habitat. If you like seeing wildlife in your backyard, whether it's just bird watching or taking pictures or just general enjoyment, maybe when you're drinking your morning cup of coffee on your front or your back porch. A lot of people think of wildlife habitat and think they need, you know, maybe several hundred acres to manage it to be beneficial for wildlife, but there are actually a few things you can do in your own backyard. So just generally, habitat is a combination of food, water, shelter, and space that is arranged and managed to meet the needs of wildlife. So even a small yard can be landscaped to attract birds, butterflies, beneficial insects, and small animals, as trees, shrubs, and other plants provide shelter and food for wildlife. So maybe if you're looking to attract birds because you're an avid bird watcher, you'll plant specific plants to attract birds, provide shelter for them. Or if you maybe want quail or dove, they prefer more brushy habitat. So if you have a few acres, maybe leaving old brush piles in certain areas. As the plants you use for food and cover will help determine the wildlife species attracted to your backyard. Nesting boxes, feeders, and watering sites can all be added to improve the habitat. And of course, planning is necessary for attractive and productive wildlife habitat. You have both a horizontal area to work with, which is the size of your yard or your acreage, as well as a vertical area that stretches from your soil to the treetops. And I thought it was interesting that they mentioned the vertical area, because even for me, when I'm thinking about managing wildlife habitat, I generally just think of the horizontal area or just the size of the area you're working with, and forget to take into consideration that vertical space, which is from the soil to the treetops, because of course the trees are important for wildlife habitat. As the vertical area is composed of the canopy formed by the tallest tree branches, understory vegetation consisting of smaller trees, shrubs, and vines, and the floor, which is the space under these trees, which is often dominated by low-growing ground covers, and the basement, where a variety of organisms exist. So the basement is beneath the floor, so the floor, you'll have low-growing ground covers, and then the basement is kind of where dead leaves and different things collect, and you more get insects and those types of organisms working in there, and the soil. And different wildlife species live in each of those zones, so numerous habitats can actually be provided on a small piece of land.
Yeah, so a lot, like you were saying, insects, probably like, even ants and stuff like that. I mean, they'll like that area because there'll be lots of cover there. Although, if you've ever seen A Bug's Life, the one part cracks me up where, a leaf falls right in the middle of the ant line. They're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And then they're like, hold on, come on, come around. Okay, we're good now. It's like they freaked out because even though, and they say that's kind of how it is. Like, if you break up kind of an ant line, they'll confuse them a little bit, because they'll be like, wait, what's going on here?
You know? It kind of throws off their system and routine.
Then I think they kind of get around it eventually. But I think it's the funny way they described it in the movie, but basically, oh, no. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a break real quick, and we'll come back with Wendy and David after this break. We'll be back around 18 or so. More Greenside Up on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this home. Hump Day.
Outdoor beauty of nature inside.
Good morning. Welcome back to Green Side Up here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. Also joining me in studio is David Scrantz, and joining us on the phone also is Wendy Powell. Ladies, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having us.
All right. So before the break, David, you were talking about wildlife habitat, and we got to a good breaking point there. So we can go ahead, if you want to, just a quick overview of what you were talking about, and then we can move on from where we left off.
Yeah, sounds good. So before the break, I was talking about wildlife habitat, and commonly people think, myself included, as wildlife habitat as managing a large area, maybe several hundred acres of land for wildlife habitat, but you can also manage your backyard or just a few acres for wildlife habitat. Wildlife habitat is a combination of food, water, shelter, and space arranged and managed to meet the needs of wildlife. So even a small yard can be landscaped to attract birds, butterflies, beneficial insects, and small animals, as trees, shrubs, and other plants provide shelter and food for wildlife. The plants you use for food and cover will help determine the wildlife species attracted to your backyard. Nesting boxes, feeders, and watering sites can be added to improve the habitat. And as I talked about before the break, and I'll briefly mention again, when considering the wildlife habitat and managing the space you have, it's important to keep in mind that is both the horizontal area, so the size of your lot, as well as the vertical area, which is the area from the soil or the ground to the treetops, as the trees in their canopy and below the trees, that understory, all of that is important wildlife habitat for different types of wildlife. Trees and shrubs are the backbone of any landscaping design and are important for wildlife shelter. Many tree and shrub species are excellent sources of food for wildlife, and proper selection of plant material can meet both the aesthetic needs of the homeowner and the food and shelter needs for wildlife. So when considering managing your backyard for wildlife, it can be good wildlife habitat and also still be a beautifully landscaped backyard. So you don't need to give that up in order to have good habitat for wildlife. And then, of course, water is very important, is a very important part of wildlife habitat. Clean, fresh water is important to birds, bats, butterflies, and other wildlife. And it's just as important for them as it is for people. Water can be in a saucer, bird bath, or backyard pond as an adequate way for wildlife to get water. Just be sure to change the water every few days to keep it fresh. And in hot weather, like we've been having recently, it may be necessary to refill the water container daily. Logs, rocks, and water-holding structures can provide drinking and even basking habitat for turtles, butterflies, and songbirds. And stones with depressions that can collect water from rain will help attract butterflies. Squirrels, chipmunks, rabbits, raccoons, opossums, skunks, woodchucks, mice, and deer are the species of wildlife that are commonly found in more urban settings, as these species are highly adaptable. However, in some cases, they may become unwanted visitors rather than welcome guests. So that is one thing to keep in mind if you have good wildlife habitat is, of course, it's very enjoyable to see wildlife coming through, but occasionally you may have problems with wildlife. I know I've gotten a few calls with especially people who have skunks a little closer to their house than they would like. So just make sure to keep, if you have a crawl space or anything like that under your house, make sure to keep that bordered up good. If you notice any boards that have holes or have maybe rotted out a little bit, make sure to replace those. And then if you keep those brush piles or wood piles, that can make great wildlife habitat. But if you keep them a little bit farther from your house, those will help keep animals like skunks that you probably don't want close to your house a little farther out.
I live in a trailer house, so it's like you got to keep those skirts all make sure they're all fine, because it's like, man, if even one of those gets just enough space, they can get under there and they'll hear you above you and they'll freak out and they'll spray, and then the entire house smells like it and you're just like, and you know you have a skunk at that point.
Exactly. So that's,
luckily I haven't had that yet, so
that's good.
All the skirts at my house are good, so that's a good thing.
Good deal. So those are just a couple of things to keep in mind, along with raccoons or the other animal that's a little bit more common to have problems with. So if you avoid setting out food that may attract scavengers, such as raccoons, the most common is usually pet food, cat or dog food.
And I do want to ask you about raccoons real quick, because I think we talked about this a few weeks ago off air, and we never talked about it on air. But raccoons, for the most part, they're nocturnal, correct?
Yes, they are.
Well, we've had one around our trailer park, and the dude is just out in the middle of the day. He doesn't care. It's like he's like, I do my own thing. So is there any reason why he's doing that, or is it just maybe he's just really hungry, or...
Or the first reason that came to my mind, especially since it's in a more urban setting, you know, it's a housing tract area, is that he's probably just become very comfortable with that area and people being around. Raccoons are more nocturnal by nature, but they also tend to be a little bit more shy and secretive by nature. So they don't really like coming out and about when there's people around and activity.
Right.
So I think probably with him is he's just not as shy and has gotten used to being around. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and then there's a dumpster close by as well. So maybe he's trying to get in there, and he's smelling food, basically.
Yeah,
so
he's probably smelling something that smells really good, and it's worth it to him to come out and about.
The good thing about it, we got good lids on our dumpster, unless he can power lift. He's not getting that, because even my 12-year-old has a hard time getting that lid up, so I'm not sure if a raccoon would be able to get in it either. So, but he probably still smells it though. I smell that, but it's like I can't get to it. So but I was wondering about that, why he would be just roaming around in the middle of the day, you know.
Yeah, and that is important that you mentioned, that the dumpster has those heavy lids on it. So even if you don't have a dumpster, you just have trash cans around your house, if you are having problems with raccoons getting into the trash and you want to kind of keep them away from your house and, of course, prevent those problems, either maybe taking a bungee cord and keeping those lids locked down, or having those heavy metal trash can legs are both good options.
Although I had a friend who had lids, and he put rocks on top of them and thought that would work. Nope, they just tip it over.
Yeah, they're pretty clever.
I mean, if they're hungry enough, they'll find a way to get to it, and they just tip it over. They don't care. But anyway, I wanted to ask you about that, because like I said, that dude was just walking out in the middle of the day like it was nothing. So like you said, he's probably comfortable with his surroundings. Nobody bothers him. He doesn't bother anybody else. So we're just like, okay, fine.
He's probably kind of become adapted, and that's his new habitat.
Maybe he is our mascot for our trailer park. So
that could be.
I mean, he's a good guard dog, I'll tell you that, because they can be pretty vicious when they want to be. So
yes, they can. And that's the other thing to keep in mind is, like you mentioned, raccoons can be pretty vicious, and then other wildlife, if they feel threatened, they will protect themselves. So definitely watch them, enjoy them, but be respectful of them and kind of keep your distance.
Yeah, practice social distancing with the animals. Just enjoy watching them, basically.
Yes.
All right, and Wendy, are you still there? Let's see. Hold on. Let me see if I can't get her back on. Okay, Wendy, are you still there? Wendy, I don't...
Uh-oh, did we lose her?
Oh, no, I think I hear her. Wendy, you there?
Yes.
All right. Okay. No, you're fine. You're fine. We're just going to bring it back to you, because during the break, you're saying you did have something else that that you could talk about with fescues.
Yeah, I was going to mention that there's lots of options for late winter, early spring grazing. If you're not wanting to put out a lot of hay, or if you didn't get a lot of hay put up this year because of the weather circumstances, you do have some options. Of course, any growing plant is going to require rain, so a little bit of that is going to, of course, take some faith. But you do have some options. Now is the time to be thinking about planting turnips, forage turnips. These are a little bit leafier than your garden variety turnips. They provide more nutrients to your livestock that are grazing. Planting these forage turnips along in combination with ryegrass has proven to be an effective practice. So if you want some late forage grazing with the turnips and then you've got the ryegrass coming in for some spring grazing, it's a good combination to get a few more months in. It does require some tillage, though clean tilled seed beds are the best. But you might could get away with a light disking if your soil is exposed enough. So if you're able to do like a burn down with some glyphosate, that might also be an option for you. There's lots of different combinations of wheat. Again, wheat with ryegrass. Or other winter annuals. We could even talk about some oats if you wanted to plant oats for about now. Plant the oats about now for some late fall grazing. Or you could even push that back into October and get some forage for February before our Bermuda grass starts coming on or native grass. So there's lots of options for winter grazing if you're not wanting to put out hay, or again if you didn't get enough hay put up. So if anybody has any questions about that, I'd be happy to work with folks to create those plans to help you get some ideas gathered up and to do some soil testing. A lot of these plants are not native, nearly all of them, so they are going to require some management to get them going and to keep them going to provide some sustenance for your livestock.
All right. Good stuff there, Wendy. And thank you so much for coming on today. We really do appreciate it. And Davin, before we get out of here, if maybe people are just joining us, what are some of the programs that you guys are putting on, and including one coming up this Saturday?
Yes, we have one coming up this Saturday. That is the pickle party. So if you're interested in learning more about canning and pickling, you definitely want to check that out. They are asking that you RSVP for that, so they do get a head count. And then we also have a Dining with Diabetes class coming up that will be held online. And the Master Gardener class this fall is also going to be offered online. So those are a couple of great options to take advantage of that you can participate in from the comfort of your own home if you would like to. And to find out more about any of those programs and to RSVP for the pickle party this Saturday, you can call any of our extension offices. The number for the Independence office is 620-331-2690.
All right. Well, Davin, thank you so much for coming in today. And Wendy, thank you so much for calling in today. We appreciate it, ladies.
Thanks for having us.